5, 6, 5, 6, 7, 8.
I rise, you rise, we rise, we rise, we rise.
We Rise are community media sponsors of Radically Fit and Gemini Moon Botanicals event, Queer and Well, a QT BIPOC wellness fair. With technical support from Poppers, our rad local DJs, we are sharing out the speakers panels from this gorgeous Earth Day gathering. We are so excited to share these recordings with you all. Queer and Well is a queer, trans, Black, Indigenous, and people of color-centered wellness fair, including panels discussing what environmental and social justice looks like in tandem with community care as we continue to navigate capitalism and white supremacy. More information and links to these speakers can be found in show notes. We hope you enjoy this brilliant dialogue. We'll jump into this recording hearing from Luca Page, the founder of Radically Fit Oakland and one of the key organizers of the event. The audio begins mid-sentence. Luca is introducing the panel.
The land, and also the ways in which access has been stripped from us from a lot of our lives, and what it looks like to kind of come back to that and be able to steward land. And we reached out to folks in community who are doing incredible work on behalf of Indigenous people, people of color, and Black folks to steward land, and have been doing this work for a long time. So today with us, we have Inez of Segurite Land Trust. And we also have Lael from Shelterwood Collective. Woo! And Lael is also doing us a huge favor and is the star of the show and will be leading the conversations that we're having today. And also we have another panel later this afternoon. Kat Brooks will be here alongside Christina Chase to talk about some social and political things that we want to discuss too, and we'll talk again. But yes, I'm gonna hand the mic to Lael. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody. All right, queer and wellness, am I right? Like, how can you be queer but not be well, right? It's debatable. All right, well, I'm so fortunate enough to be up here with you, Inez. It's always so nice to share space with you, and Inez has come out to the land, and I feel like we always find ourselves in similar panels talking about queerness and land. So I'm excited for us to talk a little bit about our work. I don't know if you want to share your pronoun, and then what do you do on the day-to-day at Segurite?
Awesome. What's up, y'all? I'm Inez Izquierda. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm super happy to be here today. I work with Segurite Land Trust. I'm the creative lead with the project, and I'm also an artist and media maker here in Oakland. And when I saw this invite for this event, I really wanted to be a part of it because I used to organize a queer art and craft fair called Queer Magic Makers back in the day here.
Yes.
And one of the things that we wanted to do was, like, you know, we're like, we need queer spaces where there's like not to this wellness fair where there's not like appropriation, where there's not homophobia. Mm-hmm. We're trying to prioritize queer and trans people of color. And one thing that we did every year was collect money to pay the Shu'umi land tax for Segurite. And what we were recognizing is, like, even as we're creating queer spaces, even as we're trying to create these other kinds of spaces, you know, we need to recognize whose land we are on. And when I first moved to Oakland, I had the chance to start working with Karina Gould, who's the tribal chairperson for the Confederated Villages of Lashon, whose land that we are on right now. And so before, you know, my kind of education about this place and this land was straight from her. We worked in an after-school program for Native youth here in Oakland. Mm-hmm. And so since then, I've been able to, you know, I was a part of the group that started Segurite Land Trust, and we're an urban, indigenous, women-led land trust here in Oakland and the greater territory, returning land to indigenous hands. And our work here has been really important because we're co-founded by the tribe whose land that we are on. They're still here, and they're still fighting to protect their sacred sites. They're working with intertribal urban indigenous people from all over to try and find a new way for us to connect on land, to bring land back to indigenous people's access so that we can have food, medicine, ceremony, cultural activities, chilling. So that is a very quick and brief introduction to Segorite and me. And I guess I'll pass it back to you, Lael, because we have kind of talked about some of these topics. I know we first kind of engaged in queer projects on indigenous land, this talk that we did about how do we create justice on stolen land. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I would love to hear more. Back to you.
Thank you. And this is going to feel like a conversation. You are all witnessing Ines and Lael in dialogue. So I'm Lael, I use they, them, their pronouns. I'm one of the co-founders of Shelterwood Collective, which is a 900-acre Black, Indigenous, queer-led stewardship project for cultural change. And we were born out of the COVID shutdown and the murder of George Floyd. I don't ever forget that about our story because it was what was happening in the world that really enraged us into movement. And the whole purpose of our project is scale. Is if you could get queer communities specifically to increase the scale of impact around their values, this world would be in such a better place. So we like to say that in about 10 years, we would love to be the smallest queer-led project, and that is a dream that we have. And a lot of that is because we dreamt of 10,000 acres, and we like to say 900 acres is our compromise. So a lot of who we are is we currently steward land on the Kashaya Band of Pomo Indians territories in Sonoma County. I'm a descendant of Yaqui, Mayo, Yoemite tribes of the Sonoran Desert, so that's southern Arizona, northern Mexico, and we're split by the border. And I grew up on Kumeyaay territories in San Diego, California. I say this because, like, how often do you have the opportunity to talk about these indigenous legacies that we're just all benefiting from every day? Like, the Ohlone people have a particular culture that really weaves itself into Oakland. And so my work is really focused around cultural change, is I look at our projects as part of a cultural movement towards rematriation, towards land back, towards reparations, towards this healing that we really need as Black, Indigenous people of color in order to survive and adapt with climate change. And that is our birthright. Our survival, our ability to thrive, that's our birthright. So we really think about it holistically, where basically you could throw any radical framework and we've been experimenting with it. Transformative justice, horizontal collective decision making, all those things. Because that's really our traditional ways. That's what has been stolen from us. And my co-founder likes to say that our removal from the natural world was a violent act towards us that we need to repair. And I say that because we take leadership from the Kashaya and we take leadership from organizations like Segorite. So a lot of my work is around thinking about this broader network of our work and a complex place that we hold. And I think you and I, Ines, we hold this often is like as Latinx, Latina people who are around indigenous sovereignty, how do we hold that complexion when we come from a 300, 400-year-old colonial system that's literally created a hybrid community of people. And I feel like I came into this movement really thinking of myself as I'm Mexican, but I'm indigenous descent. And the more that I've learned about my identity, I'm like, wait, my people are still fucking here. Like, what is this mind fuck that these white Spanish people did to me? And us being leaders and advocates of rematriation, that says something. That says something about our decolonial journey. And I'd just love to hear from you at Segorite, like, what speaks to you about the rematriation movement? How do you navigate those complex identities?
Well, first of all, I come here with the recognition that I'm a guest on this land. And though not every single thing that brought me here was of my own choice, as so many of us can say, that I am still a guest. And so that, like, to conduct myself as a guest, to come with respect, to listen and to ask permission. And I think that one of the things that's been really important and that's really uplifted Segorite Land Trust and the work of rematriation is so many people really recognizing our own roles in this entire system of colonization, and then kind of like plugging into unraveling that, right? And so Sogorte is intertribal, meaning folks from all tribes in the United States, but also folks that are indigenous to other places. We have folks from Pau and other islands. We have, my family is from Bolivia, from South America. We have folks from the Pacific and all over, right? And why? Because so many indigenous people have been displaced and relocated and are here in Oakland. Actually, Oakland in the Bay Area has the second highest density of indigenous people of anywhere in the country, second to LA, because of genocidal relocation policies that force people to cities, right? And so one thing that happened after that is people started organizing with each other. And Sogorte is a part of that lineage of organizing, right? People who are like, how do we save our cultures and practice sovereignty in this own way, practice spirituality, practice culture? And so that's what we're trying to do right now. And I think that we are able to do it different ways without even having access to land through just struggle and survival. But as land comes back, we're seeing how we're able to deepen that and also start to work with other folks that have had experiences of oppression under colonialism, you know, across different groups, across folks that are housed and unhoused, folks that have a lot of resources redistributing those, folks that have no resources putting in work. And I think that we're braiding together something that has possibility and hope.
Mm. Thanks for reminding us around just the complexity of indigeneity, and specifically here in Oakland, because I even have a hard time understanding it outside of the border ideology. Like, right. Indigenous people actually exist all around the world because we all are rooted in place. Yeah. And it's like the way in which we need to reclaim, honor the actual peoples whose lands you live on, and also recognize what's the decolonial journey for yourself so that you can continue walking this path, moving towards this path, in a way that honors the earth and that honors indigenous people. And I always look at Sogorte and I'm just like constantly learning about how you all are navigating this in a urban location. Like, we're very rural and it almost feels a bit easier in rural location because you have the res. We understand whose actual family stewarded our land 300-400 years ago. You don't have that in urban settings. You really lose a lot of that because of how hyper quick and how much colonization's escalated in this. I know that we probably spend a lot of time thinking about our relationship to land. And I think that as a guest on Kashaya, specifically for us at Shelterwood, is we are very much trying to navigate the two-spirit practices of Kashaya tribes while also trying to create the space for, quite frankly, centering the Black healing project around what it means to belong to place when you literally have your existence be eradicated because of the slavery in this country. And so we are unapologetically holding the complexity of holding that journey for Black queer folks while also honoring the two-spirit practices of the Kashaya. And I'm just gonna tell you, y'all, that shit is not easy. Like, it is like complicated because you're talking about these are your lands. And there's these people that we love, that we want them to feel like they belong here. And the reason why we want that is because our resiliency as a collective is what can come from this. So when I think about Latinx folks and Latine people, they're not far from that. Like, we have literal identities of people who have been created as an erasure of their indigenous identity. So they're a part of that journey. And so when I think about like my folks, like my family who's Mexican, my wife who's Guatemalan, our understanding and our remembering of our indigenous ways while also honoring the privileges that we have had because of that colonial project, it's the fucking shit show that we're in for the next 20 years. So I'm so glad that I get to do this alongside Sogorte. And I'm so glad that I get to do this alongside my collective members and along you all. You're here listening to us because I imagine you think about this all the time. So I think I'll seed back into relationship to land and would love to just hear some tenderness Ines, what does relationship to land look like for you? And you tell me if you want to take this conversation somewhere else, boo, because I'm ready to go wherever you want to go.
Well, the first thing that I was thinking is like how many layers of like learning about the land there is. And, you know, I've lived in Oakland for almost 2 decades and I know a lot of the history. But like now that we have access to land through Segurite, I'm learning a much deeper layer of history. So when land comes back, we try to find its whole story from when it was first stolen, right? What has this land been through, right? So even, for example, there's this little tiny slice of land in West Oakland. It's between 2 houses and trying to think like, how did this little slice of garden about 25 feet wide and I think like 90 feet long come back to Segurite? And so tracing that, we find all these interesting things in the history. Like that one piece of land tells us a story of gentrification of West Oakland. It tells us there used to be a famous jazz singer that lived in this garden. That was her garden in the 40s and 50s when West Oakland was like thriving. And then we saw it was shut down for years and years. And it's just very interesting to be able to, you know, follow it all the way to when like someone first made the piece of paper that said this land is now owned. Right. And during that time when the Ohlone were in hiding, and then to come back, and like last week we had a youth group there making medicine with plantitas that were grown on rematriated land and talking about grief. And so to me it was such a beautiful thing, and like to be able to see like such a tiny piece. And I mean, I think that that's the, when you're saying like the city and the rural, and we have a youth program now at Segurite, which is really dope, but you know, a lot of the youth have never had access to land. They literally didn't know food grows in dirt, you know? So like it's a huge learning curve, and to be able to like share these teachings and share these things on land that has been returned has this layer of like, there's gonna be justice for y'all, you know? Like it's not like learning these important things. And like for me, there was this huge hypocrisy through school, but like, wait a minute, what about our history? Or wait, what about these other things that are missing? And for them, they can actually see like, it's possible. Like we might be able to stay in Oakland and work and live here as indigenous people throughout future generations. And so I think that's really cool.
That's so powerful. I love that. We were actually just talking before this panel about how forward thinking Segurite and Shelterwood is, and that in itself feels so radical. And I think as you were talking right now, I'm like, the impact that we're already having just by existing, how many people are starting to organize to create the same across the country. And that's the whole reason why we exist. We want more little brown youth to be able to say, I don't actually have to move from where I live. Like if I plant this tree, I can see it grow and maybe my kids can tend to it. And I think that's what we are gonna need to get ahead of climate change. That's what we're gonna need in order for us to organize around our survival. And that we have been doing that. One of the things that really make us passionate about, you know, besides the fact that queer people are like the best, but one of the things that make us really passionate about queerness is that queer people, we have experienced a level of rejection, whether it's society, whether it's been your family, whether it's been that one friend that you did not even think was gonna be homophobic when you came out to them. And that rejection has forced us to organize communities, has forced us to organize family, has forced us to organize safe spaces, like the Queer Magic Makers, Queer and Well. Like, y'all, the reason why we do events like this is because we know what we go through. We know that if we don't organize for ourselves, people aren't going to take care of us. That is a climate resilient strategy, y'all. Climate resilient strategy. Your identity has literally taught you how to organize your people so you can survive climate change. Write that shit in a grant. Go get the money. Like, we need this right now. We need this right now. So that's why Shelterwood really focuses on queerness as our resilience strategy. When we look at the ecology, like there's so much queerness in it, and that's what gives me so much hope. Just like that the history is not the only thing we're undoing. We're undoing the biology, we're undoing the physics, we're undoing everything, the ways that we think about that. So, you know, bringing it back to wellness, bringing it back to connection to land, we are reflected on land, and that's what Shelterwood aims to do. How do we bring everybody who needs to rest, people who need to strategize, people who are excited to dream, and just give them the space to do it? And that's what catalyzed us. that's what made our work possible. And I think looking at the leaders of Sororité, that's what probably made them want to exist too, you know? Ines, this is awesome. I'm just so glad I get to talk to you. Are y'all feeling this convo? Does it make you feel well? But does it make you feel queer?
Queer.
All right. So I think like what I want to speak and pivot a little bit is to talk about, like, now that we've been in this work for, you know, a bit, and I will say I met Ines through Transformative Justice Organizing, so we've had quite a similar trajectory, actually. And the next panel's on transformative justice, just so you know, and abolition and alternatives to the carceral system and all that cool stuff. So just planting that seed. But we've had a similar trajectory, and I'm wondering, have you noticed a change in the rematriation work, in the land back movement, in the reparations movement that kind of makes you feel hopeful for where we're headed? And if you can kind of bring some of that spice of what you're noticing, what wakes you up in the morning? What makes you excited to hop on that Zoom call? Because y'all, we spend a lot of time on Zoom calls, okay? All right? It's real fucked up. I'd love to hear if there's anything that's changing that really gives you hope that you would love to share.
This was a long time ago. I think when We Ought Land Return was happening, I made a Google alert for land back. And there was nothing, right? But now they start coming in, right? So to me, one of the exciting things is it is spreading. There's land back is something that comes through. It's popping up in the news. Another, you know, land is being returned. And I think that is so amazing and exciting. I think the possibilities are, like, I can't even begin to imagine how it's going to multiply itself, like, with simple things. Like, once land is out of speculative for-profit market, then that whole entire labor of paying rent is gone. Like, imagine our movements if we didn't have to have everyone paying rent. Imagine the work that we could do. Like,
yes.
It would be phenomenal, right? So those, I can see how it's immediately, like, just opening, amplifying the possibilities. That is super, super exciting to me. And that so many people that are involved in different kind of social justice work, I was thinking about this is really related to transformative justice. It's like, people are really starting to be like, what is the historic harms that are built into the work that we're doing? Like, we can't just say we're environmental justice and forget that we're on stolen land.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, justice is also justice for indigenous people. It's also justice for black people. It's also justice for the earth, right? So I see that manifesting more and more as, you know, folks are reaching out to Sororité from all kinds of different justice movements and being like, you know, we're getting it together to get some land and you should have that land. We want to do our work on it, but it's really your land. We're just mobilizing resources to get it to you. And so many conversations like that are starting that's making me feel that, you know, we really have the possibility of changing the way that we're structured and the way that we can move forward.
Land back. Land back's what gives you hope. Land back. Give the land back. I that gives me hope as well. I'm trying to think, what gives me hope about what we're doing?
Well, we were talking a little bit. I kind of wanted to know if you, I know we have to wrap up soon, but can you talk a little bit about y'all's relationship with fire?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we can definitely talk about that. Sorry, y'all. We have to also keep track of time. Yeah, so I mean, that does actually give me hope. Yeah, that gives me hope. So we have a 900-acre forest. Say about 20 acres of that is, you know, buildings. And then literally everything else is just forest. We've spent the last, well, before we even started this process, and I want to highlight this because this speaks to the audacity of planning, of which I think our people are actually great at, is we did a whole data survey of Colorado, Southern California, Northern California, and the Pacific Northwest around how much rain's been coming in the last 30 years, when fire has rolled in the last 10 years, whether there's snow, whether there's anticipated global temperature changes that we're noticing in these specific pockets. So we literally thought about what was the most resilient place for our people, y'all. And we picked the second wettest area in the state of California. We got there and there was two creeks that run full year. In California, there's like two springs that are just constantly giving water. That is a blessing, a real, real blessing. And we really feel like the land picked us. We did a ceremony before we even put in an offer on the land. I'm mostly spelling this out because if Spirit is calling you to engage with the land in a ceremonial way, really lean into it and find the local indigenous people to connect around how you can deepen that connection. And because of the water is why it feels so possible to bring in the relationship with fire. So there's a narrative shift, and specifically in Sonoma County, and y'all have probably also been seeing it in the Bay Area, that fire is actually good. Fire can help spread seeds of oak, which are one of the native species here that we have to encourage, that y'all are, some people are possibly getting some shade from. It looks like tan oak, I don't know. And that because of that, we have to incorporate fire back into that ecosystem. It helps the biodiversity of the space, which helps support our two important native trees, which is redwood and oak. The more that we've learned about this land, just in the short year and a half of being here, is that this was a traditional food shed for the local Kashaya. So there was like a whole oak island that folks would come and harvest. And then there was a redwood ridge that kind of helps protect that oak island. And the oak island is a big part of the thing. I'm saying this to you all, I probably should be showing you a map. But it to us, it's kind of our little gay island. And when we section it off for like when we're going to do certain ecological work, we very much use like red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple. So we're very gay there. And us bringing in fire has been a lesson. We've learned that we can't do it without indigenous communities. So every time we burn, the Kashaya send out a representative. They help us make sure that no artifacts are being disrespected. We have a forestry team that we've invested 3 years over $2 million so that they can grow a network of foresters that are non-traditional, that are not having to go through traditional pathways, who are women of color, who are men of color, who are queer. We still have our sprinkle of white men because we're in Sonoma County and they really do know their shit, so we're learning. But it's being led by a radical black male. And so we are literally funding a new jobs opportunity for folks who can caretake to the forest, y'all. Like, when we think about how much can we dream, it doesn't stop with us existing. It stops with helping other people exist, just like you all bring in youth to help them bring their vision to life. So as we're doing wildfire practices, we're doing a lot of partnership management, and it's great because we can bring in the ceremony, we can bring in the aspects of tending, and then we're burning. We're burning an acre out. We're at the point where we've learned how to do pile burns, how to use chainsaws, like queer folks out there with chainsaws. It's really hot. It's fire. It's lit. I'm a little too old to be saying that. The reason why I say this is fire is good. We're about to change that relationship. And we're burning large acreage. We have this high intensity restoration project because if you look at an acre of the 900 acres, traditionally pre-colonization, there would have been 100 trees in that acre. Right now there's 600. That's a crisis of mismanagement by white supremacy. They have literally removed humans from tending to the forest, so it's made it that wildfires are having the catastrophe that we see here in California. That's what we're fighting against. We're trying to create a new model that includes this awareness of our traditional ways of tending to the forest. And when I tell you all, our ancestors tended to thousands of acres, selected which tree species they were going to encourage, and mitigated which other species were going to compromise that species from thriving. They said, here's the oak. The oak seems to like that one animal, that one insect. That insect seems to eat that. All right, we're going to grow that shit a lot. And then they did that for thousands of acres. And I'm super simplifying. I know there's a lot of high-tech indigenous knowledge there. But that's the skill we're trying to get at, is that people can take care of thousands of acres. We can do that. The fact that you think that you can't is a Western conservation model that has taught you that you are bad for nature. And that's a European belief, because you know what they were doing in Europe before they came here? They were fucking up their forests. So when they got here and they saw our little sexy brown asses, they're like, oh, these are fucking them up too. It's like, no, y'all, we were doing it right. You actually should have came here and learned from us. So I say this because fire is one element, sacred element, that we're starting to incorporate, which is bringing in a lot of healing for us and healing to the forest. And that comes in balance with water, because we are in a state of drought, even though we had these huge waters, and some areas are saying they're not in drought anymore. Climate change isn't going to go away. So we really have to plan, how do we be in better relationship with water? How do we be in better relationship with fire? So we're doing that shit.
Hell yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for asking.
Thank you. That's dope.
I was like, this is going to be Inessa's spotlight. Yeah, I think, you know, in the spirit of wellness, I was just curious, how do you take care of yourself? How does Sagorite take care of themselves, minus being the baddies that you all are?
Well, I appreciate that question, because y'all, it's rough out here. And even when, like, wonderful things happen, like a land comes home to its ancestral caretakers, we remember, like, all the other lands that are still, you know, under threat, and all the people who don't have lands to be on. And literally, like, you know, with a land return also comes grief, you know, of all the other lands, right? So taking care includes being with land. Mm. I had, like, a healer, a curandera, who would just, you know, make me just lay on earth. Mm. Just lay your whole body on the land, right? That is a medicine. Do that for an hour a day. So I do that. I lay on earth. And then, but also we were talking, I want to mention a couple of things. We're doing some structural things. We have a 32-hour week. Mm. We have, yes, hibernation, 2 weeks off, paid every winter. We mm-hmm. have cultural and ceremony leave, mm-hmm. which is not vacation. It's paid time for you to go connect with your mm-hmm. culture. And those are things that we're trying to be like, how can we do this for the long haul? How do we bring people back into their wellness? And so those are a couple of the practices. And I know you had mentioned some things too, so I'd love to hear about some of the stuff at Shelterwood.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, we're kind of just copying that too. So we too have a 32-hour work week.
In theory.
When you live full-time on the land, it's like 32 hours, but, you know, people come at rare hours, and then, you know, you're kind of having evenings where you have to go check on a couple piles that are burning. Anyways, it's non-traditional, but it's all healing. This is what we chose, right? This is what we want. This is what we want folks to be doing. We also have a hibernation period, which is actually very beautiful to hear that you all do as well. It's actually new knowledge for me, is we shut down in the winter for a month, because the winter is a high intensity season for the natural environment. You have trees that are really shedding. You have a lot of death on the land, and a lot of the supportive ecosystems for a forest goes to sleep. So that impacts how much water is able to be collected, whether a tree is releasing more branches. You literally have roads getting blocked. Now we have power shutoffs because of our monopolized energy grid system, which we will not talk about that. So I think in wellness, we really adopt some of the ways as you are all moving. And on top of that, we really embrace transformative justice. So we really practice horizontal governance. That means everybody's voice is valued, but we support leadership. If you feel like moving with this project is important, and I don't see anything that's of detriment besides I don't have capacity, or I don't feel like I have all the details to make a proper decision, you should still be encouraged to move towards that project in a way that fulfills your heart. I'm talking about a hybrid between hierarchies and horizontal. And that's important when you are doing large-scale land management, because you have to be able to trust the people that you work with to make decisions over your well-being and the well-being of an ecosystem. We basically have two full-time jobs, y'all. We have the computer work of managing the nonprofit and building an organization, and then the literal clock-in time of having to go tend to a pile that's burning or check in with the forestry crew to make sure that everything's going well. And so with that, it requires a sense of trust between the collective members. So that gives me wellness, because it feels like returning to our ancestral ways of how we villaged together. And the last thing I'll say is we have fully embraced conflict and tension. Every quarter, every 3 months, we have an hour and a half where we sit and you just ask, how you doing? And you know all this shit comes up. I'm fucking tired. I haven't been able to take my lunch all every day. I'm pissed that you sent that email without talking to me about it. It all comes up, y'all. And that is our natural ways. Our people sat in ceremony to flesh this shit out together. And I think that's what pulled me to TJ. I feel like in some conversations back in the day, you were on that tip as well. And so that gives me wellness. The more that we can disrupt your what you do for work, that's your purpose. And if you're not aligned with it, there needs to be a quick shift. And when I say that, it's like important to know that your 9-to-5 is your life. And if it's filled with conflict and tension and navigating so many dynamics, this is the world that we are trying to fight for, where you can be free to execute your purpose and to live in alignment with your values. And we really try to do that at Shelterward because we know it doesn't stop with us. We're the ones that are bearing the brunt of setting up the nonprofit, of figuring out the fundraising, of, you know, renovating so many buildings for the next 2 to 3 years, but it doesn't stop there. We want a community of 20 to 30 people. We want a volunteer network of 150 to 200 people who can come and say, that's the tree I take care of in the winter. It literally, that's the 900-acre scale that we want. So we just think about wellness really holistically, because why the fuck not? And as queer people, that's part of what we've learned. You've learned that when one system isn't fulfilling you, maybe the family unit, maybe the friend network, you kind of go build somewhere else. And as we grow up, they all start to kind of, you know, catch up to each other, and then it starts to feel like more managed. At least that's my hope, that everybody's experiencing that. And we have the ability as queer people to manage the complexity of returning back to life holistically. Like, I feel like it's in our DNA. I feel like that's what our ancestors were to our people, you know? So when we talk about queer and wellness, it's really you. You are the most important asset, the most important person, the most important thing to your community. And, like, don't untap that power just because you feel limited by the structures. Yeah, and that's our wellness. We get to live that in our little queer forest, and we hope that everybody here can at some point come and touch that forest. And if I may steal a little bit more, Ines, I'm so sorry, is we're really thinking about disability justice at Shelterwood. Is the outdoor space and the environmental space does not think about folks who have disabilities. And we're literally working with a disability rights activist. We're designing a cabin right now, which I'm only saying it because this is the space to say it. We want to name that cabin the Stacy Park Milburn Cabin. Yeah. So our people are gonna be reflected in the forest. And so if you don't know who that is, you definitely need to go Google Stacy Milburn, an amazing disability rights leader. And we need to bring folks who have disabilities to the forest, to a natural environment, to an ecological realignment, because similarly to how we value queer resiliency, folks with disabilities have navigated a fucking society that has made it impossible for them to survive, and yet they're still here. We have so much to learn from these people. That's right. And they're so important to our communities. Very, very important. So the better that we can help accommodate in these early stages and extend the forest to them, whatever way that looks like, is really important to us. So wellness all around.
I know we're getting to the end of our time, but there's a couple things I want to shout out from Sogorte. But first, I wanted to see if there's any questions. Did anyone have any questions about Shelterwood or the work that Sogorte is doing?
Or the work that Ines does, yes. Yeah, so the question is, how is the pandemic impacting our work, and how are we still navigating it?
I think that the pandemic has actually like amplified the need for this work. I've seen it, contrary to other things, really growing during this time, kind of a bunch of things that weren't working. I feel like people are like, all right, let's get rid of that and let's try something new. Every kind of radical land project I know about is getting new kinds of support and growing. So I think that, I mean, it's also been very difficult for our communities. It's really emphasized where, you know, we've had to step up and like feed our folks, you know, support medical things. But in terms of a larger movement, I feel like the pandemic has shed light on how our current structures are just like savagely inadequate to meet our needs, and people are really stepping up to build something else.
Ines, can I ask you all about your Hemetka values? And do you mind sharing a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Sogorte Lantras has a project called Himetka, which is the Chochenyo word for everything together in one place, and it's our emergency response hubs. And we did start those at the beginning of the pandemic with the first piece of land in Deep East Oakland. And it's basically like a spot where when it goes down, we have some supplies. You know, there was fires going through Oakland at that time, and so we knew, oh, we should have a shipping container that can't burn that has some medical equipment in it. It has respirators in adult and kid sizes. And over the years, we've been able to add a water catchment system, solar panels. We have our garden there, and we're also collecting seeds and medicine. And what if we could have that at every garden? What if mm-hmm. we could have that in every part of town? And mm-hmm. it's been interesting because the land that comes back is, you know, it's in Deep East Oakland, West Oakland. It's the part of town where, you know, people don't always respond when you make a call to emergency. And so it's part of this, you know, in this theme of we're taking care of us, we got to mm-hmm. build what we need. And so that's part of Himetka, Climate Resiliency Survival Hubs.
Yeah. And I want to learn more about how we can spread that in a rural setting.
Totally.
The pandemic made Shelterwood possible. Mm-hmm.
The shutdown,
Siri literally listened to us and said, "That's what I figured." the pandemic made Shelterwood possible because philanthropists and funders were in a place of desperation because we were all in our homes that they didn't know what was the best way to support, which means there's a big piece of possibility there. And so if we can look at some of these crises that happen in our society, and there's going to be more because that's the nature of climate change, as a place of possibility to move the pendulum for our people, we are going to do that. That's what benefited Sogorite. And so Shelterwood was born out of philanthropy being willing to contribute to something like us. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. If anybody has any more questions, I don't know if Ines, are you going to hang out here for a little bit?
Yeah, feel free to hit us up. And I have some info stuff. We have a flyer for this Queer Projects on Indigenous Land panel we did, which had some really interesting land projects throughout California that are unsettling and decolonizing. And I got some land back stickers for you too. So come up and thank you, everyone. It was wonderful to be here.
Thank you. As always, it's so nice to talk to you and just hear what y'all are up to.
Thank you, Leal.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lael and Inez. We got stickers up here and flyers for Sogorite Land Trust, so feel free to come up. Please return at 3:00. We're gonna have another panel. We Take Care of Us. Lael will join this and moderate our guests. We have Christina Chase of National Association to Advance Fat Acceptance. And we have Kat Brooks of Anti-Police Terror Project. So please get food, stay hydrated, check out the vendors inside. Thank you so much.
Queer and Well was presented by Gemini Moon Botanicals and Radically Fit Oakland. Radically Fit is the Bay Area's radical community gym, rooted in fat liberation and joyful movement for all queer, trans, Black and Brown folks and their allies, regardless of experience, size, or ability. You can learn more at radicallyfitoakland.com. Thank you for listening to the We Rise podcast. You can learn more about our cultural production at weriseproduction.com. We'd love to hear from you, and you can email us through the link on our website. And connect with us on Instagram and Facebook at We Rise Production and on Twitter at We Rise Producers. We Rise is a labor of love, and we deeply appreciate your support. If you're able, you can contribute to our Patreon or PayPal, which you can find on our website. Shout out to our brilliant music producer, Diasporadical, to the inspirational youth of Pink Panther Sorority for our theme song, our compassionate transcriptionist, Yolanda Mendoza, and to our collaborators, creatives, and visionaries lifting hearts and minds in classrooms, on stages, in Zoom rooms, and on front lines across Turtle Island and overseas.
5678.
I rise, you rise, we rise, we rise, we rise. We rise, we rise, we rise.